Our tech guru, Jesse Feiler, joins us this morning as we discuss recent news from the world of privacy and personal data. Wow, there is a lot of news. Jesse Feiler is an app developer, author, and consultant specializing in small business and nonprofit organizations. His most recent books are The Nonprofit Risk Book, Finding and Managing Risk in Nonprofits and NGOs, written with Gail Naowith, and Learn Computer Science with Swift. His most recent apps are Cyber Continuity, a free app to learn about your vulnerabilities. And I think that means cyber speaking, not just in life, although that would be much more popular, I think. Although maybe many of us are horribly aware of our vulnerabilities. And the Nonprofit Risk app, it's a companion to the book I mentioned earlier. Jesse Feiler, is always a wonderful pleasure to have you on the program.
It's a pleasure to be here.
All right. So we're getting around. Are we starting to understand privacy and security a little bit better?
I think we are. And some of the things that have happened recently, like within the last week, to me, put all the ducks in a row, and we're starting to see how security and privacy are being taken very seriously at very high levels. By high levels, I consider that, because I'm such a snob and was born in Washington, the Supreme Court of the United States.
Yes.
That's one of the biggies. And they ruled that our location data, where we are, that we capture on our phones, can't be accessed without a search warrant, which is, to me, that's a very, very significant decision, because it says this data, we've been running around saying, you know, safeguard your data, use good passwords, do all of this stuff, and people who love us have listened patiently, unless they see us coming, in which case they go away. But we've been saying it's important, and now we're starting to see, with that and with the European Union's new regulations, they are taking this seriously. And so I've sort of started turning it around and saying, you know, if these organizations think it's so important to pass regulations, laws, and judgments in the Supreme Court, we'd better be doing our part. We can't screw around with this. That is important data. And we'd better treat it as being important.
Well, first of all, was there any surprise to the Supreme Court decision?
Actually, a lot of people were a little bit surprised by it.
Mm.
Many people were very happy with it.
Right.
And that's one of the things that got me thinking about this, that, you know, we have to start taking it seriously, which is, by the way, just to not to jump the gun, that's why I did write down on this little scrap of paper I have in front of me the three tips for taking data seriously.
Okay, and those tips being?
I'm sure you know them by heart, so I'll defer to you.
You feel free. I'll give you your moment.
The three things, and I don't think we've ever put them this succinctly before because it's a small piece of paper, with passwords for our data, which is what we're basically relying on a lot, except for when we rely on biometrics, facial recognition, fingerprints, and so forth. Passwords. The three things are, we want them to be long. Long passwords are good. And there's some research that's come out, several articles in the last month or so, that say long passwords are the best. The passwords should be single purpose. No longer, you know, with all due respect to relatives and mothers, mother's maiden name is done. It should be a single purpose identifier just for a password.
Okay.
Don't use your dog's name, your mother's maiden, your favorite color. No. It should be a purpose for that. And it should be something, this is the one I like best, that you control. No one should tell you how to construct your password. That means that all of the rules that we've lived by for decades, you know, you must use one of three special characters, a question mark, exclamation, correct, and so forth. Or on some of them, you must not use those. It must be four numbers. It must be three non-number characters. All those rules all go out the window. And we're stuck with single-purpose long passwords as the gold standard now.
One of the fascinating things as an Apple user, I notice that often as I'm signing up for one thing or another, it'll give me a password suggestion. Have you seen that on Safari? It'll say, mm-hmm, here's a password suggestion.
Yeah.
And it's like SFT-1739632FL1726X. Okay.
Oh, I know that password.
Not sure how they arrive at that. Not sure how the hell I'm ever supposed to remember that. But I find it interesting that they're making that suggestion.
Yeah, and it's part of their keychain that they have inside the operating system. And you can actually control the formatting of those passwords. But a password like that, and any password manager does this, they generate passwords for you. You can change them, but they're pretty good passwords,
right,
with good strength. And then store them in your keychain or your password manager, and you never type them. That's the trick.
Now, is that good or bad? Meaning that, I mean, it's good, I suppose, as far as security goes. It may be bad as far as remembering what it is. Or God forbid, you are ever on another device or whatever the case may be.
Okay. That gets into all sorts of issues.
Right.
But
am I bringing you off track?
No.
Okay.
No,
is this relevant?
We've been doing this segment for quite a while.
We've never worried about relevance before, have we?
I think our definition of relevance is flexible.
All right.
So as we were saying about parakeets.
Yeah.
Even now I can hear people typing away parakeet as their new password.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
But the issue of writing down passwords and so forth. Password managers are the best because you don't retype passwords, but it does mean that the password manager on your device or wherever it is has to be subject to one master security key. It could be a master password, it could be a fingerprint or whatever, but something that you trust then has all of your passwords and identification within it.
When did you get to all three? We got to all three?
All three are long, single purpose, and under your control.
Under your control.
And there are variations on these things. There are one of the things that Apple and other vendors are using now is dual authentication, where it's a password and something else, like entering a code on another device. That's more sophisticated. I'm looking just at the simplest way of protecting data with passwords. Long passwords, single purpose, and under your control.
When it comes to security, though, and this privacy and security, password is just one part of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess my question is, how much we can control that, but we don't have much control over the other stuff, do we?
Right. That's where these three items I find are sort of interesting. Because if you want a long password, not just four numbers, but you want a long password, like some of the research that came out was checking how good a passphrase is, because it could be something you can remember. So it could be something like, this is sort of a passphrase equivalent of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Typical passphrase, the quick brown fox jumped over the lazy black dog quickly with ice cream. You know, that's
right.
A long thing that you might be able to remember. And so you get the remembering possibility there by going to length. And a long password is very hard to break. Coming back to this, these three very simple things are very hard to implement, to your point about what other people are doing, because if you want to have a long passphrase, which we know now is a very secure way,
right,
of choosing a password, and the software that you're using lets you type in four numbers. Well, you can't type the quick brown fox.
No.
In four numbers, which means that you have to find some other way of entering that data, or you have to realize that every time you encounter limitations on passwords and passphrases, like four numbers, must have question mark, must not have exclamation point, and so forth, you know bells should go off in your mind. You know you are using very old software.
If I'm on a website, I find it amazing because there are times where renewing my subscription to Vanity Fair magazine and working through the security of that website is more difficult than finding out my account balance for my bank. And it doesn't seem to me that that should be the case.
I will venture a guess.
Yes. And by the way, I'm not even complaining about the security of my bank, which seems to be excellent because I have the thumbprint and the whole thing. Like, I'm happy with that. It's just much easier to use.
For a couple of reasons. It goes back to the old software thing.
Yeah.
Because the financial institutions, first of all, they know they are dealing. I don't know how to say this. So I think Vanity Fair is a great publication.
Yeah.
But
I didn't renew because I couldn't figure out how to get in, so I'll just pick it up in the newsstand.
Had you renewed, you would have seen how it really is great.
Lovely magazine.
But in the world of security, people who are really worried about implementing strong security are more worried about your bank balance than about the articles in Vanity Fair.
Yeah.
Unless they're the authors and they want.
Well, sure. Well, that's what I would think. Absolutely. But it's sometimes going to be very difficult. They're asking you all the questions you mentioned earlier, some of the security questions and the background and stuff. And you're like, well, good Lord, I'm just trying to get into an account that I made 3 years ago.
But
okay.
So those are the issues. But the financial institutions are regulated and are, first of all, people know that they've got to be secure. That doesn't mean all of them are in good shape. There's one bank that I deal with sometimes that drives me crazy because it's one of those things where you must do this, but you can't do that. And it's one of the ones, a number of them changed in the last week, so maybe this is fixed. But they have rules for your password.
Right.
It must have the question mark. It must not have an exclamation point. Blah, 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 blah. And they reveal the rules to you after you have typed in a password that doesn't abide by the rules.
That's right. Yeah, tell me the rules beforehand, and maybe I'll figure this out.
And one reason that may occur, and I don't know if it happens in every case, but I know it has occurred in some cases, is there are some people who believe, with some justification, that the more information you divulge about the rules for password structure, the more likely it is that people will try to break in because they know what they can't do.
Jesse Feiler is our guest. He is our tech guru. We are discussing privacy and personal data. I want to read three paragraphs from the Guardian newspaper dated the 12th of June. Apple is closing a security gap that allowed outsiders to obtain personal information from locked iPhones without a password, a change that will thwart law enforcement agencies that have been exploiting the vulnerability to collect evidence in criminal investigations. The loophole will be shut in a forthcoming update to Apple's iOS software, which powers iPhones. Once fixed, iPhones will no longer be vulnerable to intrusion via the Lightning port used to transfer data and to charge the devices. The port will still function after the update, but will still shut off data an hour after a phone is locked if the correct password is not entered. The flaw has provided a point of entry for authorities across the U.S. since the FBI paid an unidentified third party in 2016 to unlock an iPhone used by a mass killer in the San Bernardino shooting months earlier. So, is that good or bad? I can't figure this one out. on one hand, I want my information to be secure. On the other hand, I don't, you know, if the FBI is trying to find a mass killer, well, maybe that should be something they can figure out.
Yeah, this is a thorny issue.
Yeah.
And that's a very good example. However, I'm a little bit, a lot bit, big bit, to, on the side of protecting privacy.
On Apple's point of view, because on looking at it through their lens, how do you sell a product that where you can say your information is safe on this device?
And the issue is that when we had this was in the San Bernardino thing, and it was scandalous because Apple was not unlocking an iPhone that might have had information on it.
Correct.
That might have explained what the killer was up to.
Right.
Okay. After the murders. Now, that to me, when there's a situation where we know that there is data available, or where there might be data available that definitely will prevent a mass murder, that's very different from saying we need this access to this data for something that has happened in the past. And the security things seem to be settling out now that, first of all, every time a flaw in security is discovered, bad guys try to exploit it, and the vendors and the people who are trying to protect the software try to patch it. So it's sort of a never-ending race, and it never will end. So I don't know. So I think it's a good thing that the flaw was discovered. It's unfortunate that it existed, but we know there are flaws in almost all software because they're made by humans who have flaws.
Right.
So it's good that the flaw is discovered. It is good that it is patched. And the theory that we could have, and I think most people in the tech world, I think, agree with this, if we have a special, what we call a back door to bypass security on devices that is available to the authorities so that they can unlock devices and get at the data on the devices that otherwise is not available. And the back door is only for the authorities. There is, I think, a consensus that at some point,
everyone will have it.
Bad guys will have it.
Right.
You cannot have a back door.
It's like when you lock your keys in your car and either the tow truck or the police show up and they have that thing.
Yeah.
And they go down and they unlock your car door. Well, okay. But eventually then the bad guys get that.
It's a banked coat hanger. So you can go to the dry cleaner and get one.
So we have a minute. Anything else to follow up that we need to know regarding privacy and security in these latest things?
And the importance of them. I put a couple of articles on Champlain Arts. And one of the interesting things about personal data is that we are looking at it in a much broader way, what personal data is. I'm referring to the article that's linked there about Google being able to predict when you're going to die. Which is, to me, that seems to be the essence of personal data.
That's pretty close, isn't it? Well, all right. Jesse Filer provides consulting services to small businesses and nonprofits. His website is champlainarts.com, and the articles that he mentioned are all up on that website. He does a lot of work for us as far as getting that information out. It's champlainarts.com. Jesse Filer, it is great. Always wonderful to have you here.
I
look forward to seeing you next month. Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.